This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
One of the names making the rounds this week is YB Sharlina Abdul-Rashid. Now, if you don't know her, Sharlina is the Adun of Sri Delima, and her story first hit the news when it was reported that she had received a handwritten threat earlier in the month. The note read, "Mount Mananti Kamu," or in English, "Death awaits you."
Yep. So a few days later, Sharlina received yet another note. It was another death threat, and she had also lodged a police report over a Facebook poster that's been circulating. So the poster labels her a quote-unquote traitor to Islam. It also says that as such, causing her death would not be a sin. Now, this whole incident has also renewed the conversation on the Anti-Stalking Act, with PJMP YB Maria Chin pushing for it to put an end to this violent and cowardly behaviour.
So for a first-hand account of the situation at hand, we have on the line YB Sharlina Abdul-Rashid herself. Sharlina, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us on the Evening Edition. Now, this sounds like a terribly scary situation to be in. I take it you're not surprised that it's brought the whole Anti-Stalking Act push to the fore once again.
Right. In my case, I wouldn't call it stalking. I think it's actually beyond that, you know, receiving death threats and so forth. You know, I'll be honest, it's crazy. It's ridiculous that someone would, you know, go to such lengths to implicate harm on someone else.
Absolutely. And the feedback we've seen so far on this has been pretty varied, right? On one end of the spectrum, you have many people who are angry and worried for you, people who actually feel that perhaps these threats are justified. And then you also have some who are very kind of matter of fact about it, you know, saying that getting death threats is just part and parcel of being a politician.
Right, getting threats, I hate to say this, I mean, it shouldn't happen to anyone, but it is something that, you know, a lot of people say, yeah, you know, when you become politically active or whatever, then, you know, this is something that you sign up for. I mean, that's what a lot of people think, but, you know, that doesn't make it right. You know, threats, death threats, harassment and so forth, it's just unnecessary. And it's definitely not a healthy culture to have. And it's definitely something that should not be accepted at all, regardless of what your position happens to be or what your career choice.
Sharlina, you conducted an interview with the Malaysian Insight, and in that interview you talked about how your race and your religion can often be part of the picture when it comes to your political career. Has it been difficult in that sense?
Race and religion, unfortunately for the past 6 decades, I mean, being Malaysian, this is something that is just so deeply ingrained, and, you know, race-based politics, bigotry and hate, it's just something that we deal with on a daily basis. And again, it doesn't make it right. And it's something that I think, you know, with this whole idea of Malaysia Baru, this is something that we need to get rid of. You know, being a Malay Muslim woman in a party that's seen as a Chinese majority party, you know, all these labels still come with the position. I mean, I've gotten so many names, you know, being called names, and it doesn't make it right. But for me, it's just something that I deal with, and, you know, you just have to persevere. And, you know, it's just something that you have to face head on and make sure that, you know, at the end of the day, you're able to make the changes, the reforms that you want, with, you know, whatever challenges are thrown your way.
Right. Sharlina, correct me if I'm wrong, but it does feel like gender plays a more significant role than we give it credit for, in that, you know, the fact that you're a woman perhaps further amplifies the race and religion factor. So from what you've experienced so far and how the public has responded to your case, do you feel that you're held to different standards compared against your male counterparts?
Yes, I do. And it's not just about being a woman, but it also, you know, the standards are also magnified, and, you know, it differs from who you are, what your background is, what ethnicity you happen to be, and what religious beliefs you practice. When it comes to women in politics, you know, most of the women that I've spoken to, the one thing that deters them from being actively involved in politics is the level of security and safety that one goes through. And, it's not just me, but, you know, people like Maria Chin Abdullah, she also at one point received death threats. I think she received bullets in her mailbox. And, it just doesn't happen to women, also men. the current member of parliament for Dilutong, YB RSN Reyes, he received threats as well. And it's just ridiculous and it shouldn't happen. So I think what we really need to do is just make sure that, you know, the environment, our surrounding, is healthy and also somewhat, you know, secure and free from, you know, all this negative, you know, hateful threats and things.
Charlene, a final question from me. In your opinion, do you think that all of these sort of incidents of harassment and threats actually discourage women from participating in the political arena?
I think to a certain degree, yes. Because, you know, for example, if something bad happens to a woman, if, you know, I hate saying this, but if she happens to be sexually harassed, she has to go through this entire process of, you know, the social stigma that a woman faces will definitely be different than, say, a man. And this is something that needs to change. And obviously, one way to change it is if we are able to get more women on board, more women represent people, you know, on state level, federal level. In other words, you know, getting more women politicians out there. But, yeah, I guess one can say it's a chicken and egg situation, you know. I mean, you want more women, but you know, you have the challenges, you have the barriers. So how do you address it? Now, this is something that we really need to thoroughly discuss and address before we can get more women on board.
Absolutely. Charlene, thank you very much for joining us on the program, for your thoughts and for you know, sharing this with us. That was YB Charlene Abdul-Rashid Adun for Sri Delima. Now, after this, we look into the proposal for an anti-stalking act recently mooted by Petaling Jaya Member of Parliament Maria Chin Abdullah. Yu Renchung of the Women's Aid Organization joins us to weigh in on what that law should constitute. Folks, stay tuned to the evening edition. Here's David Bowie with Ziggy Stardust. BFM 89.9.
Banish fraudulent maneuvers. BFM 89.9.
It's the evening edition. You're with Caroline and Ezra. We've been talking about the death threats received by the Adun for Sri Delima YB Charlene Abdul-Rashid. She, in fact, joined us a little earlier to talk about her experience and what such incidents mean for women in the political arena.
Yep, this news has also reinvigorated the discourse on anti-stalking laws, spurring politicians and lawmakers to resume that whole push for it. PJ MP Maria Chin Abdullah has been very vocal a proponent on the issue. In fact, Shalina said a little earlier that she had been a victim of this herself.
Mm. And we're going to take a look at what that law would ideally look like. On the line is Yu Renchung, the Acting Executive Director at the Women's Aid Organization. Renchung, thank you very much for being with us on the evening edition. Now, I know we've talked about this before. In fact, we broached the topic more than a year ago with you. Why is it taking so long, and why don't we have this law against stalking yet in place?
Stalking is something that's a relatively new law, and in that it's something that we didn't inherit in our criminal code from the previous legal system. It's something that started popping up in the 90s in the United States and other countries. So it's something that wasn't in the books, but countries are slowly adopting. So the question then is, since stalking laws have been popping up in various jurisdictions since the 90s, why hasn't Malaysia cotton up? That's the real question. And a part of it is due to, you know, some aspects of stalking are evolving with digital forms of stalking and so on. It comes down to who the policymakers are and whether or not they're connected to people's realities. And if you read some news stories, you can sort of pick out elements of stalking. You know, for example, there was the murder case where a woman was shot by her ex-husband. And if you look into the story, you'll see that this person was stalked multiple times in her office. She had to move workplace and so on. Earlier this year, there was an incident where a woman did a viral video of a testimony where, you know, she was being stalked by another car, and she wasn't able to get the support that she needed, and we saw the distress that caused in her. And these are just a few stories, but if we look at the statistics globally, it's quite consistent. 1 in 6 women have experienced stalking. 1 in 12 men have experienced stalking. And if you look at Malaysia, you also see that about 1/3 of domestic violence cases involve some element of stalking. So, you know, on the one hand, we could say that stalking is something that is a relatively newer laws in the sense that it didn't come from from pre-independence time, but there's no excuse for policymakers not to take this on as a contemporary issue and enact some laws to protect survivors and victims of stalking.
Right. So, Renchong, given that there are no laws against stalking at the moment, what are some of the measures that stalking victims can take?
Okay, so broadly speaking, there are two ways that current survivors or victims of stalking can get some form of help. But these are quite inadequate. The first is through getting a civil injunction. So this means, you know, in a civil dispute with somebody, you can apply for an injunction and get an injunction against somebody so that the person doesn't come near you and do other types of acts. The problem with this is that this is very costly. So, depending on your lawyer and the situation, it could cost thousands of ringgits just to get an injunction order. And then the timing in which it takes may not be quick enough. So that's the first way, which is injunction order, again, which is not quite adequate due to cost and time. The second is through once the situation is escalated. So it doesn't really protect you from stalking per se, but say, for example, someone stalks you, and in the course of stalking, they threaten you physically, or in the course of stalking, they destroy or damage your property, or in the course of stalking, they physically assault you. So once that happens, though, there are penal code offenses that list those particular acts as crimes. So then that's at a point where you might be able to get some form of help. Basically, the person could be investigated and charged in court. So this is still inadequate. Why? Because firstly, you have to wait until the situation has escalated. And the point of anti-stalking laws is to help prevent the situation from escalating from stalking to something else. Secondly, even if someone is investigated, the person who is being stalked does not necessarily get any form of protection during the investigation stage or even during the court process, which, you know, of course, could take months. So with the introduction of anti-stalking laws, we would also have restraining orders so that during the court investigation and court process, that person could have access to some form of protection. So really, we see that the current mechanisms to deal with stalking is very inadequate due to cost reasons, time reasons, and due to a lack of restraining order.
Right. Can you help perhaps refresh my memory, Renchong, for such legislation to be meaningful, what would a law on anti-stalking need to cover?
So there are three areas that the law on stalking, anti-stalking law should cover. The first is on a definition of what is stalking. So if you look at various stalking laws across the world, there are three main elements of any of a definition of stalking. So the first would be to define stalking as a course of conduct. It's something that is continuous or repetitive. So one example is someone repeatedly calls you. So that's a course of conduct because that's happening repetitively. But you could also think of situations where someone is following you continuously. So maybe the person follows you from point A to point B. So you may not think of that as something as repetitive, but it's continuous. The person is following you over a period of time. A definition of a course of conduct should also list out examples of behaviors associated with stalking. So it's not so clear-cut, but what some countries do is they list out, okay, for example, you know, following someone repetitively. The second part of the definition is to list out what kind of impact that course of conduct has on a person. And so the key here is that stalking would cause emotional distress in somebody. And the third and final part of the definition is to include this term of reasonableness. So how do we know that a course of conduct, be it following someone around or calling someone or repeatedly messaging someone, would have the impact of emotional distress on the person being stalked? So we apply the reasonable person test. So the idea is that any reasonable person looking at that situation would say that, yes, this is probably a course of conduct that causes emotional distress. But what's important to note here is that person test must be reasonable given the victim's circumstances. So perhaps knowing that a survivor has gone through domestic abuse with this person and then this person is following and calling this person repeatedly, that's something that you could say, okay, yeah, that could probably cause this person to have emotional distress. So those are the definition part, which is course of conduct, impact of emotional distress on the person being stalked, and then applying the reasonable person test.
Okay, Renchong, that's a clear definition. What other areas should be part of this law?
The second part of what anti-stalking law should broadly cover is the remedies. So knowing that someone is being stalked, what kind of remedies do we provide that person? And the most important remedy here is introduction of a restraining order. So why is stalking And this is one of the reasons why introducing anti-stalking laws is so important, because we can allow someone to be protected from stalking and be protected from any further acts that might follow from the stalking. So if we introduce a restraining order that does not assign guilt to anybody, but the primary focus of the order would be to protect and prevent escalation of stalking into something else. So a restraining order would simply say, you know, this person cannot come within X meters of you, or cannot communicate with you, cannot use a third party to do such and such towards you. So the idea is really on prevention. So that's the second part of any anti-stalking law, would be the remedies part. And of course, the third would be defining certain punishments for stalking.
Right. And are you optimistic, Rin Chong, that we'll see a law of some sort perhaps passed in this parliament sitting? Because there was some talk of it last year, passing an anti-stalking act, but nothing really came of it.
So it does have widespread support. It really comes down to whether the persons at the highest level of decision-making are going to take this seriously or not, whether or not, you know, ministers, people in Attorney General's chambers, people working in the de facto Minister of Law office, whether they actually see this as a priority. And I think in the previous government, not all these important and key stakeholders were really connected to what women, mostly women, were going through on the ground and their experiences with stalking and the fears that they have around being stalked, because, you know, frankly, the policymakers at that time, perhaps they never experienced it themselves, and that's why they didn't think it's a priority. And that's actually one of the reasons why women's groups have been really pushing for this 30% women in cabinet, 30% women policymakers, because issues that, like stalking, that disproportionately affect women, usually it's the women policymakers who really understand that a bit more and just know how urgent issues like these are. So with the new government, you know, we're really hopeful that this is something that will be taken up. I think a number of the policymakers in the new government or backbenchers in Pakatan Harapan have spoken in favor of enacting anti-stalking laws. I think there was a commitment in the manifesto to enact sexual harassment laws, you know, which is different from stalking laws, but it's related in some sense. So yeah, I mean, there's been no commitment as of yet, but we're very hopeful that this is something that the new government will look into. And it's something that is quite straightforward. There are so many model laws from various jurisdictions, other countries that we can look at. In fact, the Attorney General's Chambers in Malaysia has actually drafted up sample laws for Malaysia. It's something that would not cost that much money, and it's something that has really cross-party and bipartisan support.
Well, all right, Ren Chung, thank you very much for that. That was Yu Ren Chung, advocacy manager at the Women's Aid Organization, with his thoughts on a potential anti-stalking act. Here's some music by Neil Young till the morning comes.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.